Reading from the Sri Bhakti Sandarbha, page Anuchet 320. this statement is an expression of, quote, O beloved, your lotus feet are so soft and tender that we fear that they may be pained by placing them on our hard breasts. And thus we do so very gently. Yet you wander the forest on those same feet. Are they not pained by pebbles and sharp stones? Our mind reel at the very thought of this, because you are our very life. The statement is an expression of love, because it shows that the gopis are concerned only with what is favorable to the Lord, disregarding even their own pleasure. In contrast to the gopis, Kubja's passionate desire for Krishna is predominantly a desire for her own enjoyment. As such, it is lacking the mood of the gopis, which is exclusively for Krishna's pleasure. Thus, Kubja's amorous desire is criticized only in comparison with the love of the gopis and not due to any inherent defect. Rather, Sisuka has praised Kubja's desire because of its effect, as expressed in this verse by the touch of Sri Krishna's lotus feet. Kubja relieved the pain of her breast, bosom, and eyes, which were tormented by the pangs of love. Smelling the fragrance of his feet, she took her lover, the very embodiment of bliss, into her arms and embraced him to her bosom, thus dispelling the agony of long separation from him. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.48.7 Om Jnana Timaram Dasya Jnananjana Salakaya Taksurum Mritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Tapadantitam Adadanastanam Dante Vidam Yache Puna Puna Srimad Rupa Kadam Bhoja Tulisham Janva Janmani Vairagya Yuk Bhakti Risham Priyatnai Apayama Manabhipsamandam Kripam Buddhiya Paraduta Dupi Sanatanastam Prabhamastriyami Vancha Kopa Sarubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Nimo Nima Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo Hare Ramo Rama Rama Hare Hare. So greetings from Newburgh, New Brudge. I'm here now at the home of the Rubble family. Of course, this weekend we're going to have our Kirtan Festival and the Spiritual Children's Festival. And it seems to spontaneously be developing nicely. Of course, I got a unexpected call from Niranjan Swami last week, who was in Ukraine or Moscow or someplace around there, who expressed enthusiasm to come. And the other day I got a call from my godbrother Satyanarayan, who's was or is a BBT trustee, who very nice, a very good friend of mine, who expressed interest to come. He was told by Pradyumna Pandaji, one of Prabhupada's dearest disciples, who will also be coming, as will his wife Arundhati, who is a Kirtanier and doesn't live so far from here. And when I came in today, not many people know this yet, but Kuladeep got a call from Shastra that Satsrut Maharaj is going to come here on Friday and help permitting come and participate, you know, in the kirtans, and so that's nice, such a dedicated devotee. Looks like we'll have a nice weekend, and of course it's confirmed again that Ananta and Achyuta will be coming. Chandramali Swami, Kinchana Krishna has arrived from India, will be coming up to organize the kirtan. Satyaraj said he was coming, he told me that today. So we should have a lot of nice, I'm hearing different people that his friend Kirtan Ras and Beth are coming. Kirtan Ras is the younger brother. He's 50 now, but he's the younger brother of my college roommate, who I joined Krishna Consciousness with, and very close with his family. And Kirtan Ras is running for the judge in Saratoga Springs. And anyway, the people I'm living with, just anyway, I'm hearing different people are coming, so I'm looking forward to seeing all the people and participating in the kirtans. We're on this subject, and I'm really trying to see how to present it in this format, you know, of not kind of the technical subjects sometimes, and you know, I'm trying to extract the essence, but this Raga Nuga Bhakti, when you serve Krishna out of natural attachment, just like beauty, you're attracted to beauty, so you can become absorbed in beauty. And your consciousness becomes imbued with that sentiment. You know, you're startled, it's beautiful, you become absorbed. In the same way, the heart becoming absorbed in serving Krishna. In that way, rather than doing it out of obligation and duty, which also absorbs the mind. The key is to absorb the mind. You're not naturally attracted, you have to stay under the jurisdiction of the rules to stay attracted. But it's understood in this comparative study that when when there's attachment or rag to the object of devotion, then it's the absorption is much more powerful. It's natural, and you have natural taste. And you're dealing with the mind. So if it's just out of obligation or duty, you have to still deal with the mind, which is pushing that the other way. But when the mind itself is attached naturally, and the advancement in spiritual life, this is the essence of bhakti, the advancement in spiritual life comes from that meditation and thought. But the guru devises the ways and means to think of Krishna. The essence of Krishna consciousness, to remember Krishna, not to forget him. So this is much more powerful because the mind itself is absorbed. You're not just having to subdue the mind by the power of the intelligence, but the mind itself, it has a rag, has impressions that this gives me pleasure. Where when you just do it by the obligations of the rule that I should do it, the mind may not have natural attack, may not have that feeling. And they have the feeling, indriyasyarthe, raga dvaisho vivastite. And the senses for the sense object is hate and like, according to material attachment. When that like is for Krishna. So this is what's being recommended, and we should understand that this type of devotion, pretty noisy in this house, so many kids, and I'm trying, but this type of devotion, the absorption in Krishna, obviously the absorption in a person is greatest when there is love for that person. And love for that person manifests in a particular relationship with that person. So this is the most powerful type of absorption. And the way the process works is as one is initiated into a particular line, he's introduced to his Ishtadevs, his Lord, and our line, Radha Krishna, Krishna Balaram, and he's got, we're introduced to that, we begin to hear about that, and we begin to hear about that love, and we begin to develop an attraction for it, a taste for it, an aspiration for it, naturally in the heart. And when that aspiration starts to develop, Agamuda Bhakti means the aspiration what? To serve Krishna in a particular way, to love Krishna in a particular way. And therefore you become attracted to those who do it perfectly. And then Agamuda Bhakti means naturally you begin to follow them. For example, if you have an attraction to serve Krishna as the gopis are serving Krishna, then you get to follow them. How do you follow them? First of all, in the mind, not externally. And how do you follow them? You follow their love and devotion. And what is their love and devotion? They're chanting and hearing about Krishna and serving. So you also chant about, hear about Krishna, and that becomes your sadhana. I'm going to chant and hear about these eternal residents of Vrindavan. I'm going to chant and hear as they, and what are they chanting and hearing? They're chanting and hearing in their mood of devotion. So the mood of devotion of the gopis is what? Radha Krishna Dada Mora Yuga Laki. So this is what they're, so one, and in that mood. And that type of level of absorption. And it even recommends that we should be conscious of this. You can't force it artificially, but if there's a spark of that type of love, you can be conscious to cultivate it by trying to serve Krishna with those. He mentions you chant the Gayatri Mantra, the Gopal Mantra, the Kam Gayatri Mantra. But you want to cultivate this, and you have some aspiration, and it's the line of your teachers. It's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave. So you think of that mantra, and you think of the Krishna, and the cows, and Krishna, and blowing his flute at Bamsivan. And you start to try to invoke those sentiments that you're developing by the right songs and poems. You meditate about that. He says you should try to do this. You should try to be aware of this, not just to execute things simply because we have to do it. And not to just have faith that the advancement comes by the completion of the activity, which gives us a checklist that I have followed the rule. But the advancement comes from the absorption in the activity itself. So this is the main thing that's been discussed, and we also discussed that, you know, the problems this brings can bring up from an external viewpoint. If your devotion is not inspired by the Shastras, but then can it be by the rules? If it's not inspired by the rules, can it be Dharma? And this was discussed extensively, how powerful it is that devotion has an independent potency. That's not dependent on that type of guidance. If you actually have devotion, it's not dependent on that. It has its own potency. And so this was discussed, and this glorification, and really, finally, this is what Lord Chaitanya came to give. This is why Krishna appeared. He wants this type of love because it's more powerful. It's more powerful, this type of love. This devotion. And therefore, it gives him more pleasure. wanted to increase it. And he did that. He came to increase it, Krishna. And then came to complete that mission in terms of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who showed us how to do it as he was there in Puri. With that sentiment in his heart and hearing songs of the sentiment he was cultivating, which was the mood of Srimati Radharani, hearing songs and hearing hearing stories and hearing the Bhagavatam of those pastimes and nourishing that mood in the association of devotees who have those sentiments. And he set that example. So then, you know, it came to the point that how powerful this is, that the goal is absorption, and absorption in an object of devotion is most powerful when it comes from the sentiments of the heart and mind itself, rather than some imposition of because this is something that we must do for our benefit. He's just glorifying this so much, this type of principle, and encouraging us so much to develop a desire for that. And developing a desire for that, it means that you do what is necessary to get there. And in our line, including getting the mercy by serving Lord Chaitanya in his Sankirtan mission. When you actually have desire, yes, I want this, and this is the most glorious thing, and I should get it, and you do what's necessary for it. So, you know, it comes to the point, it's glorified in such a powerful way. And then that makes the point that because absorption is the key, and absorption comes so much from the heart, from an emotional connection, rather than an intellectual connection, that he brings up the point that even when it's unfavorable, highlighting what is the essence of bhakti, which is that absorption. So even when it's unfavorable, and then to explain that, he goes to the seventh canto where this particular point is resolved or discussed in depth. And that's what we're discussing now. It's discussed very, very much in depth because Sishupal, as we described before, in the Rajasuya sacrifice, he had so much enmity for Krishna. And when he was killed by Krishna, without repeating the story, he achieves liberation, which bewilders King Yudhisthira, because the most person with the greatest degree of enmity, how is it possible that he achieved a spiritual destination? And then, and the section we're in here now, is Narada Muni explaining that. And that's where we are. And he says it cannot be said that devotees cannot, that devotion cannot be attained by an unprescribed path, because the following is said. And then there's this verse that's being going to be analyzed extensively. Historical kind of recount of people who've attained perfection, not by adherence to rules, but by absorption of the heart due to different emotions. I'm trying to find out where that verse is, but I'll find it. And it's described. I'm going to read what Prabhupada said. I got my, so I'll read the verse, and this is going to be the basis of this, and I'm just going to go to my book if you can. So I like the BBT translations are much better than the ones in this book, according to my base. I'm not a pundit. Okay, so it comes to this verse. What's going on? problem here is the numbers here don't correspond. Okay. Many, many persons have attained liberation simply by thinking of Krishna with great attention and giving up sinful activities, meaning that the absorption in Krishna purifies the heart. This attention may be due to lusty desires, inimical feelings, fear, affection, or devotional service. I shall explain how one receives Krishna's mercy simply by concentrating one's mind upon it. Kamad Reshat Ayat Snehad Yata Bhaktyeshvare Mana Aveshyat Tad Akam Hitva Navahat Samavat Tad Vitim Dita. So it's mentioning all these different. Let's read what Prabhupada said here. Let's read what Prabhupada said on this purport. As stated in Bhagavatam 10:33-39, but for he knows the terrain and the era. A bona fide listener hears of Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, which seems to be lusty affairs, the lusty desires in his heart, which constitute the heart disease of the conditioned soul, will be vanquished, and he will become a most exalted devotee of the Lord. If one who hears of the gopis' lusty behavior with Krishna becomes free from lusty desires, certainly the gopis who approached Krishna became free from all such desires. Similarly, Sishupal and others who were very envious of Krishna and who constantly thought of Krishna became free from envy. Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yasoda were absorbed in Krishna consciousness because of affection. When the mind is somehow or other fully absorbed in Krishna, the material part is soon vanquished, and the spiritual part, attraction to Krishna, becomes manifest. This indirectly confirms that if one thinks of Krishna enviously, simply because of thinking of Krishna, he becomes free from all sinful reactions and thus becomes a pure devotee. Examples of this are given in the following verse. My dear Yudhisthira, the gopis by their lusty desires, Kamsa by his fear, Sishupal and others by kings by envy, Vyadas by their familial relationship with Krishna, you, the Pandavas, by great affection for Krishna, and we, the general devotees, by our devotional service, have obtained the mercy of Krishna. I usually don't read purports because I'm conscious of the medium. And you're conscious of the medium, is you have to kind of just go where the audience is and sometimes. But, it'll just nice to just hear what Prabhupada has to say as the basis for what we'll explain today. Different persons at purport achieve different types of mukti, sayujya. Mukti, sayujya, salokya, sarupya, sarupya, sarvasti. According to their intense desire, which is also called bhava. Thus it is described here that the gopis, by their lusty desires, which were based upon their intense love to Krishna, became the most beloved devotees of the Lord. Although the gopis at Vrindavan expressed their lusty desires in relationship with a paramour, Parakiras, they actually had no lusty desires. This is significant of spiritual advancement. Their desires appeared lusty, but actually, they were not the lusty desires of this world. Chaitanya Charitamrita compares the desires of the spiritual and material world to gold and iron. Both gold and iron are metal, but there is a vast difference in their value. The lusty desires of the gopis to Krishna are compared to gold, and material lusty desires are compared to iron. Krishna, the other enemies of Kamsa and the other enemies of Krishna merge into the existence of Brahman. But why should Krishna's friends and devotees have the same position? Krishna's devotees attain the association of the Lord. The Lord is his constant, even the dominant by Kunta, anyway. Somehow or other, one must consider the form of Krishna very seriously. Then, by one of the five different processes mentioned, one can return home to Godhead. Atheists, like Vena, however, being unable to think of Krishna's form in any of these five ways, cannot attain salvation. Therefore, one must think of Krishna. So, that's more like us. If we deny God, we won't think of him. But somehow these devotees did it. But the point is somehow thinking of Krishna, and it's done most powerfully by the heart. And therefore, when chanting japa and things, you know, if the absorption is there, it really helps to first cultivate the heart, either by a mood of begging for mercy, or by praying first to the different acharyas, by looking at a picture of Krishna, some way to invoke and bring to the forefront of the consciousness whatever sentiment and desires of the heart we have to give some connection to the Holy Name. Not just the obligation I have to chant my rounds, but invoking some sense of meaning or relevancy, like the need for mercy, like the mercy of the Holy Name. If this is going to be discussed here, this particular thing. So what happens here, he gives these examples, one second. It's a little technical. I just have to look at it. Okay. So he's going to discuss these different types of sentiment. So he's discussing the sentiment of amorous desire, and he's bringing up the point, is it sinful? And that's the point he's going to discuss. Is this sentiment sinful, this passionate desire for the Lord, is it sinful? And he wants to know, is it sinful in itself? Is it sinful when it's married or when paramour? And then he describes, but let's analyze, is this passionate desire for the Lord, kama root, this form of lust, this intensity, which at least has the form of the relationship between a boy and girl, is it sinful? So he says that, and he wants to say, he's going to, in three categories. First, is it sinful in itself? Sinful in itself means this passionate desire for the Lord. Is sinful in itself, just like enmity and fear, they're sinful in itself. Because their idea, it's selfish and it wants to harm the Lord. So is this passionate desire to relate to the Lord and these amorous feelings, is it sinful in itself? Like enmity and these things with which they have an enmity for God? Or is the acts of the is sinful itself, like embracing, etc., are the acts itself sinful? If it's sinful in itself, has some enmity or feeling, is it like enmity and hate which are sinful consciousness in itself? or is it the Acts itself, or is it simply the states in the Scriptures? So he's going to analyze, is it simple in itself? Is there something in this feeling that's selfish and sinful? And this is going from last week. So he analyzes it. Well, no, it's not like enmity or fear, because he's already explained how there was a verse that Sishupal obtained this perfection through hate for the Lord Krishna. So what to speak of the gopis? Meaning, that's a different thing. It's not in the same category as enmity. And they're described also the beloved of Krishna. And really, that feeling is nothing but praying. It may have, just like they describe, between iron and gold, there's a similarity. They're both metals. You know, you can make a cup out of iron, you can make a cup out of gold, you can make a spoon out of iron, you can make a... So they're both metals. There's such a similarity, but the quality is so different. So similarly, he's going to make the point that there's such a similarity between the sentiments. There's kissing, there's embracing. So, but it's such a different quality. And what's a different quality? In the material sphere, this type of kama rupa, it's the form of selfish desire, intense selfish desire. Let me enjoy, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the controller. And in terms of the gopis, although it has the same form, the consciousness is completely selfless and pure. It's completely focused on the pleasure of Krishna to such an extent that it's as if one is not existing, because they're simply living for Krishna's pleasure and not their own. And then they quote this verse, O beloved, your lotus feet are so soft and tender that we fear they may be pained by placing them on our hard breast. This is the gopis. So it's showing they love Krishna so much that they're only, it's not about themselves. It's not about their pleasure. But even though these actions, it's all for Krishna's pleasure. So therefore, they're so concerned, not that they get any pleasure from Krishna putting his soft, tender feet on their body, but what are they concerned about? How is Krishna feeling? Is he pained? Is he pained? You know, and therefore, you can see so deeply, what's the sentiment of love? It's so deeply that when you love someone, you want to please them, so you're studying their mind. They're studying their mind. What is Krishna's desire? What does he actually want? And they're thinking that Krishna, it seems that he's enjoying putting his feet on our chest, but maybe he's just doing it for our pleasure. Because our breast is so hard and his feet are so soft, and he's wandering in the forest with those same feet, and are they not pained by the pebbles and sharp stones? So similar, is he not pained? So why is he doing it? He seems he's just doing it to give us pleasure, but our minds are reeling at this thought, because he is our life, and therefore our pleasure is his. Is he enjoying this or not? It seems he's just doing it for us, and he's pained. Just as he's putting his feet in the forest and the pebbles and the stone, and it hurts so much. And similarly, this also hurts him. So look at their consciousness. This is what Jesus is pointing out. Although it has the form of lust, it's man and woman in intimate contact. They're just focused on his mind, what pleases him. And they're worried. It's paining them. And they have no separate life. They're living for him. So how is he feeling about this? We don't care about ourselves. So is it sinful in itself, like enmity or fear, that there's some hate or selfishness or wanting something for yourself? No. He's saying, this is completely pure. There's not even a tinge. Therefore, it's called, what is it called? Kamarup. It has the form of lust, but it has nothing to do with lust. It is just faultless, pure prema. Only to give pleasure. We only want to give pleasure. And he's happy, we're happy. And when he's unhappy, we're unhappy. I think he's doing this for us, but his feet are pained by a hard breast. He must be happy, unhappy. Our minds are reeling. What does he think? What does he want? So, this is Jiva Goswami. The first one is it simple itself. And now, this amorous, passionate desire, he does something here, and you know, I'm wondering if I'm qualified to speak about it or I'll understand it, but there's Kubcha. It's a little bit different. Therefore, it's called Kama Praya. If we say Kama is lust, or if we say Kama is the intense desire to please Krishna, it's Kama Praya. It's almost that, because the commentators describe that there seems to be, she told it, Krishna's dhoti, there seemed to be some sense that I will enjoy from this. So kubja is being analyzed, but it's in the same category. What's the nature of this amorous passion and relationship to Krishna? So he's going to quote the story of kubja, of course, is that she's a hunchback, never had any contact with any man. And she gave Krishna some fragrant oils or some flowers, and but she seemed to want to enjoy with Krishna. So what's her position? So it's very subtle. But because she's an eternal associate, Kubja is conjugal ras with Krishna outside of Vrindavan, in Mathura. The queens of Dwarka, of course, the the queens of Dwarka, that's in Dwarka, and the gopis. So we'll finish a little bit with this Kubja thing today. So it says, as such, is lacking the mood of gopis, which is exclusively for Krishna's pleasure. Thus, Kubja's amorous desire is criticized only in comparison with the love of the gopis, and not due to inherent effect. But basically, they say, it's a love for Krishna. It's actually love for Krishna. She wants to give Krishna pleasure. But somehow in that spiritual world, it's just not as selfless and not as pure. Although, it's pure love. And he's going to read. Sukha prays Kubja's desire. And it says, being with Krishna dispelled the agony of long separation from him. So this means what? Separation? She was attached to Krishna. She loved Krishna. And then it goes on. Kubja also experienced love for Krishna, as in this statement. This is another feeling of, so, O lotus-eyed lover, please come here and stay with me for a few days to enjoy me. I cannot give up your company. So also showing love. She cannot give up Krishna's company. So this is actually a deep statement of love for Krishna. And then Sukha therefore said, and this was a verse before, what a wonder, having gained the association of Sri Krishna, the Supreme Master and the Lord of Liberation, is very difficult to attain. By offering scented oil for his body, the unfortunate woman made the request. So she attained by offering something to Krishna for his pleasure, fragrant oil. So this is another sense that this is actually love and devotion. And another verse, if after having propitiated Sri Krishna, the master of all controllers of the cosmos is very difficult to please. One asks the insubstantial objects that appeal to the mind. He is certainly less intelligent because of his pettiness. So here is Kubja. She satisfied Krishna and she could have anything she wants. But what did she ask for? Instead of insubstantial objects that appeal to the mind for less intelligent people, what does she ask for? She asks for Krishna. So she has a tense desire for Krishna, to please Krishna. So he goes on in another verse. Fortunate, the Lord came before her due to a simple act of devotion in the form of offering fragrant oil for his body. And then she requested something of great fortune. What does she request? A lotus lie, please come here and stay with me for a few days to enjoy. I could not give up your company. And then the Jiva Goswami said, this is just like the mood of Sutama Vipra. The poor Brahmin who, he so poor, his wife said, we're so poor, we have nothing. Why don't you beg for your friend Krishna? And somehow when he came, the residents of the inner palace, they look at this lowly beggar who's so destitute, practically naked, who's condemned by his destitute poverty. And what do they say? What great meritorious act was performed by this naked, destitute, and lowly beggar who's condemned in this world? For Sri Krishna, the teacher of the three worlds, to lead the company of the goddess, seated beside him on the bed and embraced him, honoring him just like his own brother. You see the fortunate position of both Kubja, like Sudama Vipra, that Krishna is accepting the oil and then reciprocating. And what does she want? She wants Krishna. So the question, and I'll finish with this paragraph because this subject is very deep, we can just discuss it, so we can go to bed. The question may be raised that since Kubja is libidinous, why she prays? In reply, Sukadeva spoke the second verse quoted above. And what was the verse he quoted above? Why is she praying? Because she didn't ask for material objects. Why is she praying? She's coming for Krishna. She gave oil. And Krishna is so difficult to attain that she can have what she wants. And what one who desires only material objects that appeal to the mind is less intelligent. But Kubja desired only the Lord, therefore she is supremely intelligent. This is the import of the verse. So now he says, by thus establishing that amorous desire for the Lord does not fall under the same classification as enmity and other unfavorable attitudes, we have refuted the notion that it's inherently sinful. So, what about this sentiment? How can this be? Is it sinful? No, it's not sinful. It's love. It's in terms of the gopis, so purely for Krishna's pleasure. All they're doing is thinking again. And Kubja, if you analyze it externally, there may be some sense of for herself, but actually, what does she want? She wants Krishna. She wants to love Krishna. She wants to please Krishna. And although in that lila, there's some sense, unlike the gopis who just had this ashishiva, pataritam, panastumam, madarshanam, mamahatam, kalotiva, there seems to be something for herself. But actually, she wants Krishna. It's not simple. She wants Krishna. She has devotion. She also has love. It's just outside of Vrindavan and not to the same standard. So, are there any questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Gail, okay, yes, please.
Yeah, I just want to kind of clarify my mind, Kujo's position.
Yeah, I knew you'd say that. I hope I can understand it myself. I'm trying to study it, but go ahead, what do you think?
That although Kujo's love was not of the standard of the gopis whose love for Krishna had no self-interest at all, hers was still considered love, even though she wanted some selfish enjoyment from Krishna, even though Krishna was the object of her affection. But because she wanted some selfish enjoyment from her relationship with Krishna, for that reason, it's not to the standard of the gopis.
I would say one thing else, Gail, and this is the way I understand it because I studied this before. What it is saying, although it's not of the standard of the gopis, if you analyze the various verses, it's love. She wants the pleasure of Krishna. So all I could say is that, and therefore it describes praya means almost. You know, so it's something like a tinge. It's a tinge, either of lust or it's almost, it just misses being calm or intense pleasure of Krishna. And I would say that differentiation that's mentioned and as it's brought here by Jiva Goswami in the verses, it's just something on the spiritual platform in terms of varieties of love. And we know that the love of the gopis is the greatest. It's the greatest in Vrindavan among all the devotees who love Krishna. And if you compare the different types of amorous love, right, it's also superior. But what it says here is, as such, it's lacking the mood of the gopis, which is exclusive to Krishna's pleasure. Thus, Kujo's amorous desire is criticized only in comparison with the love of the gopis and not due to any inherent defect. And then it explains why it doesn't have any inherent defect. And Jiva Goswami goes through all the verses to show in different words and different expressions that actually it's love, it's prema, she wants to please Krishna. It's just not to the level of the gopis. The gopis' love is very, very special.
So, and therefore, it seems that, you know, because normally we say that to the extent that there exists any element of selfishness, there is not love. There's not love. But in this case, it seems that that doesn't apply. And the only reason why that doesn't apply in this case seems to only be because the object involved is Krishna. It seems I don't think so.
I think what it's saying is something else. I think what it's saying is, I'm going to read you something. I'm going to go in the 10th canto, you know, and it's not Prabhupada's purport, but there's a purport there, if I can find it, that explains this. And if you give me a second, I'll look at it. Wait. Wrong thing. I gotta find it. It's 48. Gail, I have to admit on this. It's not like 100%. I'm just from what I see here in the text. But there's maybe some verse here that could elucidate this, and I'm gonna find it in a second. But let me just find it here and just see what the purport says here.
Okay.
Yeah. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti, groups are prayed to the Lord, please enjoy only with me and not with any other woman. Because Krishna was not prepared to grant such a benediction, Pooja is described here as unfortunate. Sridhar Swami adds that although to ordinary eyes she seems to beg for material sex pleasure, in fact she was a liberated soul at this point. I'm going to read another purport here from the 10th canto. It is clear from the commentaries of the Acharya that the story of Pooja is to be understood on two levels. On the one hand, she is understood to be a liberated soul, directly associating with the Lord and participating in his pastime. Someone has, is that your phone, Gail? Are you someplace?
Yes, I'm someplace.
Where are you?
A restaurant.
Oh, I thought maybe you were at a class. Okay. It is clear from the commentaries of the Acharyas that the story of Pooja is to be understood on two levels. On the one hand, she is understood to be a liberated soul directly associating with Krishna and participating in his pastimes. On the other hand, her conduct is clearly meant to teach a lesson about what to not do in relationship with the Lord. Since all the Lord's pastimes are not only blissful but also didactic, there is no real contradiction in his pastimes, since Kuvja's purity and her bad example take place on two examples. Arjuna is also considered a pure devotee, yet by initially disobeying Krishna's instructions to fight, he also showed an example of not what to do. But at least the commentator said, at least we got there from Sridhar Swami, that, you know, it's not what it looks like in an ordinary way, but it's actually more like a flavor in the relationship. But still we know that there's different levels of love. And hers, you know, that somehow it's not the same as the gopis. The gopis have a special position. And in saying that, I'm not 100, you know, I'm just saying what's said there, and that seems to be what's being brought out. The point that's being made is that this amorous desire is not the same thing as enmity or fear. It's like, in itself, it's a material thing. So it's being used to show that. It's not a material thing. Either Krishna, either the gopis or Kuja. It's for Krishna. It's love for Krishna. There's definitely love in her heart. And you're right, too. And if that's love for Krishna, then it's not material. And what does that mean? It means it's for Krishna's pleasure. That's the best I can do, Gail.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Well, I know we don't have time for more minds.
Well, we'll see. But I just want to mention that the point that's being honed in here, which I think that we have to get, it's being made again and again. I've given this class before, and it's much easier when it's every day because there's so many technicalities that keep on changing, and when I give it after a week, I want to cover something, where if I'm doing it every day, I could just cover something shorter. But I guess we're just getting the point that he wants to just make it clear on the potency of absorption and serving from the heart. And then to do that, to quote this verse where all these inimical feelings are placed, and then he wants to analyze, well, what is this lusty feeling, this amorous desire? And no, it's just completely pure. Okay. Thank you, Gail.
Thanks.
Anybody else like to ask a question or say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna.
Who's that?
Hi.
Amiya, thank you so much. Anybody else? Thank you for always listening, Nandaji Lal. Thank you. And very good. Anybody else? Yes. Yes.
In this aspect, and I was just thinking, I won't mention in the Maharaj that I read about these things.
Yes. Okay, so if you can say something, I'd appreciate it. Yes.
Okay, this thing is that Krishna himself is pan. So it's about the time, you know, whether Shishupal or Krubja, they are explained to say in different of features come. So about the time, although it appears that, you know, they are very hated, but you know, inherently they are devotees. So that was manifested, you know. That's why Krishna...
I can't hear you very clearly. The connection is not good. So say it again. What?
And it is the time that Shishupal, he was in of the time. When
he was a what? He was of the time? I don't understand. What does that mean?
Krishna is the time.
Krishna is time.
Yeah, Kala. Kala.
Okay, Kala. Okay, Krishna is Kala, yes.
Kala. So, the Shishupal, when he was killed by Sudarshan Chakra, but actually he was the original associate. Like over the time, you know, it became manifest. So it might appear that, you know, he is inimical, but it was not. That was, you know, another comment.
That is definitely going to be discussed coming up. I remember there's a very interesting point coming up where it discusses them as eternal associates, and that helps resolve things, yes. Okay. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. It's Paramananda.
Paramananda, thank you for hearing coming on class. Thank you. Hare
Krishna. Thank you for giving the class, Maharaj. Very well.
Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Kumar Sunini.
Who is it?
Kumar.
Oh, Kumar, yes. This is a very advanced subject here. Good. Thank you for coming and listening. Good. Thank you. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Okay, there are other people there that they're just shy. Okay, I'm going to have to spend a little bit more work preparing this because it's a very technical subject to present it in one class. Okay, thank you all for coming on, and those of you that are calling from the area, I probably will see many of you on Saturday and Sunday. I'm very much looking forward to this festival. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you. One chakra for the Shaka, the same as the other chakra for the Shaka, the same as the other chakra for the Shaka.